This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Columbia Tribune Sports Podcast, otherwise known as the Mizzou Sports Podcast. I'm Daniel Jones. With me is Nick Kelly here and Cameron Teague Robinson. We have a lot to talk about on this Saturday.
I'm tweeting at the link, FYI. I just don't want people to think I'm sitting here texting people.
Cameron's only paying casual attention to our podcast and Facebook Live. A lot to get to on this Saturday. We had a football game, homecoming football game, which Mizzou won 68-21 over Idaho. Did more than cover the 14-point spread. And then you also had Mizzou Madness. Obviously, we're here at the arena. We zipped right over to the arena for the basketball event right after the football game. So we have that to talk about. We have Missouri and Kansas basketball tomorrow to talk about. So a lot of things going on.
I was going to say, it's pretty quiet around these parts right now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was quiet a little bit ago.
This whole basketball intersecting with football season, I think, is something that probably needs to be changed across college sports, because the months of October and November make for pretty hectic seasons. So I guess we'll start real quick with the football game. I mean, Mizzou came in as a 14-point favorite over Idaho. Drew Locke threw an interception on the first play of the game. Idaho scored on the fourth play of the game to take a 7-0 lead. And then after that, it was all Mizzou. What were your guys' thoughts of the football game?
Well, at first it was a, oh no, here we go again. It was like, oh boy, Mizzou should be beating Idaho, but Mizzou was supposed to be beating some other opponents too. And especially this one, it was like, is this going to be the upset we thought, where Mizzou actually might lose to this Idaho team? But soon they calmed those concerns and Mizzou got right on track. And that offense had another beautiful day.
Yeah, I think I made a comment to you, Danny. It was like, I mean, Drew Locke threw that interception, and it was just a bad interception.
Yeah.
And I made a comment to you. I was just like, it's like they don't like playing here. I was doing similar to what Nick said. You're like, oh my God, here we go again. Like, they can't really lose this game. And they were able to turn it around. It was just, I mean, it was all Mizzou after that.
But in dominant fashion. And in my prediction before the game, I thought that Idaho would cover as 14-point underdogs, and after the first sequence, I felt pretty smart. I was like, I see this being a pretty tight game. Well, I am very convincing. And then the offense was never impeded, and I wrote this in my game story, but it seems like the best thing that they do is play really bad defenses, both in FBS and FCS, and they just exploit them.
Dominate.
Over and over and over. You saw it with Delaware State last year, Eastern Michigan last year, even the Middle Tennessee game, which they lost. The offense really wasn't stopped. And then this year you had the same thing against Missouri State and now against Idaho. So Mizzou's offense is good at exploiting bad defenses. That's something that's been true since the beginning of last year.
Well, and the funny thing is they're almost as automatically good against these weak opponents as they just are bad against good opponents.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you can almost count on Mizzou just dominating a team like, or Drew Locke having a great passing day, as much as you can count on them not doing well against a really good SEC foe on the road. So it's just something that it's almost not surprising, because they just have done this before. Eastern Michigan, Delaware State, just, it's happened.
In Drew Locke's defense, he had a really good day against Georgia. That was probably his best game against an SEC opponent of his career.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to see him carry it over, specifically bounce back after that first play interception.
Yeah, he finished 23-33 for 467 yards. He had 6 touchdowns and the 1 interception, which came on the first play. So he bounced back in a big way. And I guess we'll talk about right after the interception, Barry Odom said that he had a conversation with Josh Heupel, which was not G-rated. So I'm guessing Josh Heupel voiced his displeasure with that interception, which was a bad throw, bad decision. And then after that, they left Drew Locke in for 3 quarters. He was playing with Mizzou leading by 44 points in the third quarter, which seemed, I don't know if you want to call it reckless, but certainly questionable. And not only that, but they were running him on option plays.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just like, what is exactly going on here? Barry Odom, I think after the game, it sounded like he was just being extremely conservative. I don't know if he didn't trust the defense or what, but he basically said, I want to wait until the end of the third quarter before we start taking people out of the game.
I just don't know how much that makes sense.
Whatever. I don't know. Your guys' thoughts on that? Drew Lock playing three quarters seemed pretty silly to me.
I mean, if he gets hurt in the third quarter, I mean, that whole idea of I want to wait until the fourth quarter is stupid. Yeah. Like, I mean, your starting quarterback goes down. It's just, I mean, it just makes no sense.
It's kind of similar to maybe a fourth down call in that it looks good now because nothing happened. Drew didn't get hurt and they still won. But like you're saying, Cameron, if he does get hurt, then we're like, oh,
dumb.
What was he thinking, yeah, kind of thing. And so luckily for Drew, nothing happened, and there's no repercussions to it. But it was puzzling to, you know, why not give these? Because the other guys really have not had much time.
Right.
So if Drew actually does go down, what's going to happen if the other quarterbacks have to come in and play in for significant amounts of time?
Right. And, I mean, eventually you want to see what you can get out of Michael Wilson anyway. Like, you just
agree.
You want to see what
he has played all year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eventually, I mean, that's the point of having backups. I mean, to see what you have in them outside of just practice.
Yeah. Yeah. The connection with Jamon Moore was fruitful today.
He was incredible. He was really good today.
He caught 11 passes for 174 yards and a touchdown. Albert Okwuegbunam and Alberto, otherwise known as Alberto, and Kendall Blanton both had big days at tight end. Albert had four catches for 57 yards and three touchdowns. Kendall Blanton had one catch for 62 yards.
I think I got him inside the five, was it?
Yeah, almost scored a touchdown, and we talked about this during the game, but that play that they run with the tight end right up the seam.
It's open every time.
It's impossible for defenses to cover. Drew Lock said after the game, actually, Nick, you got a chance to talk to Drew. You did a whole story about that play and how effective it is. What did he say after the game?
Yeah, I was going to use this as an opportunity to plug tomorrow's Tribune and make sure to check out that story, because I talked to a few guys about what this play does. I talked to Adam Sparks on defense, and the defense has had to defend this play all the time, and they were just glad to finally see another team have to have issues with it. And so, yeah, it's tough to defend because, one, you have the matchup issue, but what Drew said is that he was a little surprised that they didn't adjust to what they were doing with Albert and leaving one guy on him, which is, I think, a linebacker.
It's because it's impossible to adjust to.
My comment during the game was you could put 17 guys on defense and they would not be able to cover that play. That's what it looks like.
Well, another take on that was that the if they did decide to put a safety over top or roll a safety his way, then that leaves either Jamon or Emmanuel Hall in single coverage, which at that point that can bode badly for defenses, where you might be giving up, say, a 15-yard catch to Albert O, or you could give up a 50-yard bomb to Emmanuel Hall. So that was one of those things where the Idaho defense was hoping to limit Albert, maybe their linebacker, and cover him rather than give up what has looked easy the last couple weeks with these deep balls to Emmanuel Hall and Jamon Moore.
Speaking of Emmanuel Hall, can we talk about that first offensive, the second offensive drive from Mizzou? Is it first scoring drive? Like, they, I want to say they had, like, maybe it was an incompletion, the first play or something like that, but they had two straight strikes to Emmanuel Hall.
They basically said, screw this.
Exactly.
We're throwing the ball to Emmanuel Hall.
Go.
We're
going
to do what has worked for the last
exactly.
2 weeks.
And he beat the corner the first play, the first time, and then beat him right again. Like, eventually you think Idaho goes, we should put a safety over top of that.
Yeah.
Like, we should put a safety on that.
And that was, I mean, yeah, Albert O looked then, he's like, all right, yeah, now it's my turn.
Exactly.
And they,
yeah,
what I think one of the storylines coming into this game was, how do they capitalize on that
right.
Emmanuel Hall effectiveness? It was like those two plays set up everything
every
else day. For the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And they didn't have that against Georgia. Maybe it was just because the personnel was so good
right.
on
and
Georgia's
it,
defense.
When you're playing teams like Georgia, they have corners that are capable of going one-on-one in certain situations.
And linebackers.
One-on-one.
And
right.
linebackers that can do that.
Right.
Idaho's linebackers
go
probably
can. One-on-one on Emmanuel Hall all game. But like you said, they have linebackers who can run stride for stride for with guys like Blanton or Albert O.
Right. Another big storyline. Well, yeah, you can read more about that play, the tight ends, and Nick's story on Sunday. Another big storyline coming out of today, Demaria Crockett did not play, and Ish Witter got the start in his place. Ish ran 9 times for 43 yards and 2 touchdowns, and Larry Roundtree went viral for planting an Idaho player into the turf. He ran 12 times for 97 yards, including a 53-yard run, which left Idaho defenders all over the place on Faroe Field.
Popped a guy's helmet off on that one play.
That was impressive.
Yeah, he very physical runner.
And, an angry man running.
Yeah. And we talked to, actually, we did get a chance to talk to Larry about the game, about that run. He said he was just trying to hit whoever was in his way, and if he wasn't trying to shake somebody, he was trying to run him over, which sounds about right. Any other thoughts on Larry's performance or Ish's performance?
Well, he certainly ran him over. There's no doubt there. He took their manhood in the process. So no doubt there. I mean, that was, if you're a fan of some hard nosed running, that, I mean, that's a textbook play right there.
Agreed.
good analysis, Cameron. Good analysis. Yeah. So good.
Impressive.
Good day for Larry Roundtree, who's been pretty effective all season. And then after the game, I made a comment to Larry Roundtree. Just, you know, Barry Odom said in his press conference that he was not ready to go and might be out for a while. That was the extent of his explanation. And then I asked Larry Roundtree, do you know, what DeMar, how serious the injury is or when he might be back? And he said, well, I don't, but I know he had surgery yesterday. So DeMarre Crockett apparently had surgery on his shoulder yesterday. His status on that is unknown. There hasn't been any official word on when DeMarre might be back or how long he might be out, but we'll keep a close eye on that because that could end up being a long-term injury for DeMarre Crockett, maybe something that keeps him out the rest of the year. Who knows? But having surgery definitely doesn't sound like a short-term deal.
No, and that's a tough hit for Mizzou because, I mean, although their offense looked very good today, I mean, you've seen it, Danny, you know this. The Mizzou offense looks really good when they're able to establish a run. And Ishwitter and Larry Roundtree give them two good backs, but DeMarre was a different type of dynamic back that Mizzou had. He did a lot for them, so that would be a big hit.
Yeah. It's just his combination of size, speed. I mean, he's just an SEC
and
back.
Blocking and
right,
blocking.
Correct.
That too.
Right, and so that's the thing is Larry and Ish are both talented runners, but they're not necessarily DeMarre. So
there's a reason he's a starter over those two. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we've touched on that. The defense was better. Didn't give up very many third down conversions. I think they allowed less than 50% today, which was good. They've been over
their lowest percentage of the year.
Yeah, they were over 50% in every game. Well, coming into this game on the season, they introduced a number of changes on the defensive end on third down, including bringing Chris Turner, a defensive end, and a defensive tackle. Cam Hilton was the nickelback for the first time all season. You also had Trey Williams playing on the defensive line, who did a pretty good job. So they made a number of changes, which made a difference on third down, and we'll see more of those changes next week. We do we have a Facebook Live comment.
I'm trying
here.
To read it.
Yeah, the print is a little small.
It says like sound. Clay Cottingham said sounded like Roundtree let go of a secret.
It might have been.
It might have been. I don't think he meant to let that.
Yeah, the official word. There was no official word on Crockett, and there was definitely never any mention of surgery in Barry Odom's press conference, even when he was directly asked about Crockett. So maybe that was something they wanted to keep under wraps.
Right.
But that was what came out in our interview, and I would expect there to be an official comment on it pretty soon. Yeah. So you might say it was a secret, but if DeMarre Crockett isn't playing next week, I mean,
something's good. We're gonna ask again.
Yeah, then there's gonna be some questions being asked
about it. Who's bound to get out eventually?
Yeah. Any other thoughts? Did this game change your opinion of Mizzou at all for the rest of the year? Either one of you guys?
Well, not really. I mean, this is their second win over a very bad team. I mean, this team is probably worse than Missouri State, to be honest. I think this is a performance people expected. I mean, you would hope that Missouri could do this. I don't know if something people expected. But this is a game they should have won, just like the Missouri State game is a game they should have won.
What they should have done is win is something they actually did. So that was a positive change.
Yeah, that's good.
They did follow through with what they should be doing. But, you know, good for Missouri fans kind of thing. Good homecoming win. They know what it's like not to win in homecoming.
It's the first one in 3 years,
I believe. Yeah. Right. So, you know, take the positive away from that. You get a good homecoming experience. But – again, there's no need to celebrate too much.
Yeah. Well, you can still kind of make out our outlines on Facebook Live. They just cut out one bank of lights above us here in the arena. I guess to follow up on that question, it didn't really change anything for me. I guess it really just solidified the point that if Missouri's playing a bad defense, then they're going to run up the score just because they have so much more speed against teams from the Sun Belt and the Missouri Valley Conference and whatever Delaware State is in. So that I certainly saw it being a closer game. I wasn't convinced that Missouri's defense was going to be able to put them away, but they did. They were effective all day, and the offense got things going. So good win for Missouri to move to 2-5.
Hopefully the person who's watching the the person who turned out the lights is not watching our Facebook Live and thinking that they got to be done, because we got more stuff to talk about.
We do. We have a whole basketball game to talk about. Cam, you want to take the lead on this? So we had the whole Mizzou Madness thing going on tonight, official kickoff for the basketball season.
Right, yeah, and obviously that was something that kicked off an hour after football game. Free admission, so I mean it was a packed house in here. Believe the whole lower bowl was full, which was nice to see. But I mean, it started off, they had the shooter challenge, which mixed the men's team and the women's team along with a Zoo Crew member. The dunk contest, which everybody was really excited about. Michael Porter Jr. won that somehow without actually making the final. Yeah. And then the women's team scrimmage for 15 minutes and the men's team scrimmage for 10 minutes. So, I mean, it was a pretty straightforward event. But I thought it was just nice to see those guys get out here, both the men's and the women's teams, see the ovations they got from the fans, and actually just see them play basketball. We've been talking about them so much, like who's going to be in the starting lineup, the Kansas game, what could this team actually be, where are they ranked? It's just nice to see them, even if they didn't play absolutely any defense in the scrimmage, it's just nice to see them kind of with the ball in their hand, dunking, shooting the ball.
It almost felt like the dunk contest didn't actually stop. It kind of continued into the men's game.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact amount of dunks there were, but there had to be at least six or seven.
Right.
But I don't know about you guys, but walking in today was just so different and so strange. It's like, did I walk in the wrong arena? Because compared to last year, I mean, Danny, you know very well how last year this arena was just no energy, no life to it. And to walk into here where there's so much energy and like just – excitement that I mean, you never saw here last year, even against Kentucky. It was just so strange, but it was like, wow, this is actually finally here, and this team that they talked about and they put together this offseason is actually a real thing and not just something we hear about.
Well, you guys missed it when Michael Porter Jr. walked in.
Oh.
I don't know if you guys
followed
heard
him out of the tunnel.
Did you?
Not really. Right. We were standing there watching him. We kind of got trapped because the media was coming directly from the football press conference and talking with players. We walked through the parking lot, down through the back entrance of the media gate, and usually we just walk through the tunnel where the players come out to get up to the media entrance, and all the curtains were drawn, the lights were out. You know, we could feel the flames from the jet engines that were down there behind the court. Yeah, and so we were kind of like watching the players come out, and then Konzo Martin went out, and then the media came out no fanfare.
But, disappointed because I was really hoping for, before Konzo Martin, and the members of the media.
Well,
us walking out awkwardly in our backpacks and lanyards and disheveled, outfits.
When Mike, I mean, obviously everyone had a pretty good round of ovation. Jonte came out, which was the first really large one. Jeremiah Tillman followed him out. Which was a big one as well. But then Michael Porter Jr. came out, and it was, I swear, the flames were larger. Like, the scream.
They said, turn up the gas. Yeah. Turn it up to 11.
It was so, like, it was deafening in here when he came out. He came out, and he held his hands up and pointed to all the fans. Didn't do any kind of fancy dance, just kind of walked out, and it was just, you could tell that that meant a lot to him, just from the smile on his face, and it was just really nice. It was so loud in here. I can imagine that's what it's going to be like on November 10th.
Yeah, wait till Iowa State, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was kind of surreal, Nick, you mentioned that. I mean, just God knows how many people that sat in these stands that actually watched Mizzou basketball games have paid to be here thought a lot last season about where does this program go after this year. Obviously, Michael Porter was everybody's pipe dream, and at that time it's what it seemed like. You know, you have a Columbia kid who's going to be probably the first pick in the NBA draft.
Yep.
But at that time, he was committed to Washington, and just you couldn't even combine the two in your mind.
Yeah,
you couldn't combine Michael Porter and Mizzou, even though they kind of were in the same circle, and Michael was a Columbia kid. And now to see him on the court in black and gold, even though it wasn't a real game, is kind of surreal.
But
like you said, I mean, yeah, we've been talking about it for 6 months, and I was like, it's not a dream. It's actually happening. This is real now.
Harder today than it had before, really, just because it's like, you know, it's happening. I mean, we've been here talking to the players, but it, like, you didn't actually fully appreciate what it was going to be like until today, in my opinion.
And Danny, you made a point. You made a comment to me during the scrimmage. You looked over to me and just goes, "I'm really watching Michael Porter Jr. at Mizzou Arena." And I thought Michael had the perfect comment after the game when I asked him about just kind of how it felt like. That first possession, like he had to stay on a dunk in the exhibition. I think Gabe DeArmond asked him what it felt like kind of just being in a tunnel, and he just said it felt like he was at home. Like he finally felt like he was home. And I just thought,
yeah, it's right over there,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
209, yep. I think. Am I pointing to it's right behind Cameron's head.
Yeah, it's right behind me.
This one right there. Yeah. That one, yeah. That's where Michael Porter was. So that section is going to be filled to the brim.
Exactly.
They're going to be like,
oh my God,
This is Mike's seat, right?
Here. But yeah, I'm interested to get your guys' thoughts on the scrimmage. Obviously, it's a scrimmage, and there was absolutely no defense played. But I think there were a few blocks. But I'd just be interested to get you guys' thoughts on the scrimmage.
Well, Jeremiah Tillman stole the show.
3-point specialist,
in the hot shot competition. They had it was a team of three, so it was a person from the crowd, a men's basketball player, and a women's basketball player. And then as a team, you had to hit a layup, a 3-pointer, and a half court shot. So Jeremiah Tillman was paired up with it wasn't Michaels, was it?
No, it was Kayla Michael. Yeah, it was Kayla Michael.
It was Kayla Michael. Okay. Yeah, so Jeremiah Tillman takes a three, drains it, and meanwhile his two teammates were shooting at the same time, and then he went back to half court and hit his first half court shot. So he's 2-for-2 with the half court shot and the 3-pointer. So that was kind of like, Jeremiah Tillman's obviously going to be the leading scorer for this team this year.
Well, then he gets in the championship round, he misses a three, and then comes back and just nails the next one. So he was three. He hit three threes in the shooter's contest.
And his quote after the game was, and if I remember right, he said, I've never really had that range, but I've always thought that I've had that range. So, you know.
So don't yell at him when he shoots a bunch of threes tomorrow at Kansas.
So that was kind of funny. And I guess in terms of the actual scrimmage, it's hard to take a lot away from what was going on there. But obviously, I don't know. It was cool. Yeah. It was exciting, and I don't know. Did you see anybody out there on the court that you were like, that looks pretty good, or you know, that I'm surprised that this is happening?
I think it was just interesting to see how they were using the returners more than anything, because you know they're going to feature a lot of these new guys, mm-hmm. and specifically MPJ. Yeah. But for them, to, you know, we saw Terrence out there. I mean, obviously all the guys were playing, but mm-hmm. just seeing how they were kind of using Terrence, how they were using even Colin Van Leer. I mean, I think he had a 3-pointer too.
Yeah.
And so
he threw an alley-oop to, who was it? Somebody else on the yellow team.
Yeah, I want to say, was it Adam Wolf?
No, might have been.
Well, Adam Wolf had an alley-oop.
Who was on that team?
Kevin Perrier's team?
No, because Kevin,
Kevin Perrier was on Jonte. It was the gold team was Michael Tillman, Terrence.
Maybe it was Jordan Barnett. Anyway.
Yeah, it might have been.
Colin Van Leer threw an alley-oop to Jordan Barnett. I think it was.
Okay. So, yeah, just to me, it was, again, kind of surreal to see all these guys working together, because these guys who had to be the featured points of the offense mm-hmm. before last year are now the supplementary players, right. And they're working with them, and they're not having all that pressure put on them. So you can almost see them just be a little, I mean, obviously it's a scrimmage, but be just more relieved and just more relaxed, because they don't have to be the focal point of this offense.
Right. I think that's a big thing. You had guys last year, and Danny, you know a lot about this, guys who were felt like they had to score because Mizzou didn't have a lot of just go get them scores. And Mizzou has that now.
Yeah.
But a few things, I mean, I guess there's a few things that stood out to me. I mean, the dunk contest, one, I didn't know CJ Roberts could jump like that.
And he didn't make a dunk.
I know, but
he was up there. He was up there. If he wasn't trying such spectacular dunks, true. He would have been throwing them down.
In the scrimmage specifically, Jonte, I thought was pretty impressive offensively. I knew he would be pretty I guess, explosive offensively. But he, I thought he looked good. I was really impressed with Blake Harris. I know.
Yeah, he looks pretty good.
Yeah, I know there's not a, these guys weren't playing a lot of defense, but I thought Blake, I think Blake looks like the number one point guard right now. He's his game is very smooth. He's a very good passer, and he just didn't really look rushed. Which again, nobody looked rushed because there was no defense.
No urgency.
But I thought he looked really good in the scrimmage.
He's a really athletic point guard.
Yes.
There's a video on Twitter, and maybe we'll see a replay of it tomorrow. Maybe not. Of Blake Harris dunking on Kansas commit and freshman Billy Preston in an AAU game, which is pretty. I mean, the it's a video taken from underneath the basket of Blake Harris, kind of coming up from the right side of the hoop, one handed over the top of Preston like this.
It's impressive.
Even to do that play once. Yeah. Takes a ridiculous amount of athleticism. He does. He looks we'll have to see maybe in a game or two what it looks like, but he does. He looks very polished, very, very well built for a freshman guard.
I'm very interested to see what he does tomorrow against Kansas.
Speaking of which, the Kansas game tomorrow, I mean, what are we expecting from that?
Are we making predictions?
I don't know. Predictions, just what do you expect?
Why don't you make a prediction, Cam?
Start us off.
I don't know. I expect Michael to be Michael. I think Michael Porter Jr. is the best player on the floor. I think he's going to have his day. I think he's going to enjoy being in that Mizzou uniform for the first time. I think the crowd's going to be packed. I don't think Mizzou wins the game. I mean, Kansas is a top five team. I don't think people should go into the game expecting Mizzou to win. I don't think if you're a Mizzou fan, you shouldn't go into that game. And if Mizzou loses, like, oh, this is terrible. Like, oh, my goodness, we just lost to Kansas.
There's the season.
Right, exactly. Like, I understand there's frustration about losing to a rival.
Have you been to a Border War game before?
Right, no.
That's pretty much how they all go.
Right.
Even the years when Kansas was, like, the number three team in the nation and Mizzou was unranked.
Right.
That's pretty much how it went.
I understand being frustrated about losing a rivalry game. But this team – the chance they have against Kansas is to see how they stack up to a top five team. I would probably guess Kansas wins by 10, 11. And if that's the case, I think that's a good outcome for Mizzou.
Well, before I make a score prediction of some kind, I was talking to someone earlier. It's just crazy to think that this is the first Mizzou athletic event. Cause it's a game, but not a real, it doesn't count, but when's the last time that there was an event with this much hype, excitement, and
sold
just
out in minutes?
Right, like a sold out crowd, like football and basketball. I mean, like we see some really impressive Olympic sports teams here, but they don't sell out a stadium necessarily. And so it's just crazy to think that this game tomorrow is going to be just packed. Because when's the last Mizzou event or Mizzou game that was packed? I mean, I don't know.
I'm not sure we will ever be in an atmosphere. I don't think we can anticipate the atmosphere we're going to be at, and I don't think we'll ever be in an atmosphere like that again.
It is a unique situation, which is you have the most anticipated Mizzou basketball season in maybe 15 years, going back to the early days of Quinn Snyder's tenure when they were a preseason top 10 team. There was a lot of hype around that team, but, the most hyped Missouri team in a generation, getting a chance to play its most hated rival of all time for the first time in 5 years in a neutral site where the rivals fans are also going to be there. It's just a confluence of events.
The thought of it gives me chills right now.
Yeah.
And I didn't even grow up in this rivalry.
Right. And the one mitigating factor is it isn't even a game that counts for anything, but because you have all this other buildup from other sources, it doesn't even matter. I mean, and this is how I feel about it. Like, nobody that pays attention to that game tomorrow, even if you're, if you're at the game, if you're watching on the pay-per-view, even if you're just following it on Twitter, nobody's going to have a passing interest in that game. I mean, it's going to mean the world to the fans of both programs. And if it means a lot to the fans, then it's going to mean a lot to the players. Michael Porter said down there, Kevin Puryear said, whoever you talk to, that it's not going to be like today.
No.
It's going to be, they're going to go out there with every intention to win. So they're going to play it like a real game. So if it matters to them, then, of course, I mean, it's got to matter to Konzo. It's not like you're going to tell your players to take it easy, you know, with the season about to start. So I think that it's definitely going to be played like a game that matters more than just an exhibition.
And I think once they get in there and they hear the fans, it's going to be a rowdy environment. I don't think there's a way that you could go in there and be like, it's just an exhibition game. Even as a player, like you hear that atmosphere, you hear the fans behind you, you're going to want to go out there and give this everything you have.
The only place this game does not matter is in the win-loss column.
Yes.
Other than that, this game matters in so many different ways.
Yep.
In such a good way, too, with charity for the hurricane relief. Right. And so that's what's so awesome about this is it's for such a good cause, too.
Yes.
I'm curious, what do you guys think? Are we going to like cite this as the most recent Border War game? Like in a year, are we going to go back? We're going to be like, well, you know, Kansas won the last Border War game in Lawrence on the Thomas Robinson foul, not foul, 19-point comeback, or will it be the game at the Sprint Center? That was the last game of the Border War.
I think you probably cite this game. I mean, just because, I mean, they are playing. They're playing each other. It may not be a regular season game or a conference game, but they're on the basketball court playing against each other. I think this will end up being cited as the latest installment of the Border War.
Yep, I agree. I agree with that. I think it'll probably be too.
Well, and hopefully it's as good as those other past games, too.
No, it should be fun. Well, and if this were one of those secret scrimmages or secret scrimmages, don't count that. But this is a game in every sense except for it mattering in the win-loss column. So this is the Border War.
The second people start paying for the pay-per-view and host cover at parties, it's the real game.
It counts. Yeah. I'm spending money to participate in this event as a fan.
Exactly.
That means it counts.
It counts.
I'm curious to see the pay-per-view numbers on that, too.
Yes.
I think it'll probably do pretty well. There'll be plenty of good causes in the future to generate money for. I think it's pretty cool that it started a trend around college basketball. As soon as Missouri and Kansas signed up to do it, there were at least, I want to say, 10 other games around the country that were organized. The first one was today. Missouri State played Kansas State. Kansas State beat Missouri State in a game that raised money for hurricane relief. So that kind of got the ball rolling in an actual chronological fashion. But Missouri and Kansas definitely started the trend, which is pretty cool. I think this is a pattern that could and definitely should be replicated in the future.
I agree.
Do we have any other thoughts on what happened today? A big day for Mizzou athletics.
A lot of fire.
There was
a fire on the field,
you know,
fire on the court.
The thing that Mizzou does before the football games, and they're running out onto the field, they have the fire cannons. They had the ones in the arena today, but the fire cannons at Mizzou Arena put out this awful black smoke.
Yeah. You mean at Perot Field?
Yes. Yeah. That's what I meant. Yeah. Yeah. It looks like... it looks like a bomb went off. The cloud is all encompassing over the. I mean, it's like, can we get?
It was really strange.
Yeah. It was,
Can we get something that's a little bit less aesthetically destructive than like this humongous black cloud hovering over the stadium right before the game? I don't know if it's like an intimidation thing, or if it's just kind of a byproduct of a fire cannon that big, but it seems excessive. Well,
this was the worst one of the year. I feel like I haven't seen one that big.
Well, the problem was the wind was blowing like 15 miles an hour towards the open end of the stadium.
Yeah.
So the fire cannons go off on the south end zone.
Correct.
And then the wind just blows the smoke all the way across the field.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you couldn't even see to the other grandstand.
Well, yeah, because it stayed low enough where you couldn't see across the field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that should be fixed. If I was game day operations, I think the fire's cool, but can we find a way to not make a gigantic black cloud over the stadium before the game?
And also, if your game day operations find a way to bring a fire into Mizzou Arena every game, especially when your opponent is shooting free throws.
I don't know if you have an opinion on this, Nick, but I think
we did talk about this.
I think introducing the fire cannons behind the basket would be a very what do I want to say? A very efficient way, maybe illegal, but definitely efficient way of lowering the opponent's free throw percentage. Because as they're shooting,
they're sweating.
In the press area, you can feel the heat from the flame. So if you're right there on the court, I mean, it's like going to be in your face, the distraction, the noise.
Yeah, exactly. And like, the antlers are right there.
Yeah, it would be impossible to make a free throw in that type of situation. I don't know. Anything? Any thoughts to add on that?
It's probably illegal, but we think it's a good idea.
I mean, you guys are literally spewing hot takes. That's all I have to say, and I don't have any hot takes to add to this.
I was mocked because I always thought so. This was back before I was an impartial third-party observer. If you took everybody in the section right perpendicular
104.
Yeah, 104 right there, perpendicular to the basket, and gave them all big cards, you know, like you see before the game, how they hold them up and they create the designs. Mm-hmm. If you gave them all big cards, and then when opponents were taking free throws, everybody at the same time, whoosh, and then you get this big, like, 4-mile-an-hour gust of wind that maybe blows the ball one inch. I always thought, like, it might look stupid, it probably won't work, but why not try? You got guys with the foam fingers and things behind the basket and the fat heads, like, give it a shot. If it's illegal, until they tell you not to, you might as well try. I don't know.
Easier to ask for forgiveness than for permission.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta find, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. That's how it works
athletics. That's what Louisville thought, too.
I mean, if you're going to be caught cheating, would you rather be paying money to sneaker companies, taking money from sneaker companies, or using cards to blow people's free throws?
Yeah, or fire to get people from missing free throws.
I mean, I think the choice is obvious.
Well, one's a little more subtle than the other, though. So, I mean, it's up to you.
True.
You know.
It did take years for Rick Pitino and Louisville and all these other schools to get caught.
Yeah, you'd get one shot at it.
Exactly.
If it was illegal, and then that
they
would
be missed one free throw. You have to save it for the most important one.
And then they're like, no, you can't do that. We're taking those. We're taking the cards. We're throwing them in the fire cannons. So you can't do that anymore.
I thought it was – I mean, it's a fun day.
It was a busy day. We'll have more content tomorrow. All three of us will be traveling to Kansas City for the basketball game. We're going to do a video before the game. Outside the arena is the plan. We'll probably do another Facebook Live /podcast after the game.
Hopefully the lights don't go out on us this time. Somebody predicted this. I'm not going to say who. His name was Cam.
And Cam said, what do we do if they turn the lights out on us? He said, well, we do it in the dark. We'll have more content on Sunday for one of the biggest days in Mizzou athletics recent history. So any closing thoughts? Yeah, I think we kind of already did that.
It's going to be a blast, and hopefully you can be along with us for the coverage, because we're going to have a lot of fun telling the story of tomorrow.
All right, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. You can read all of our content in the works of the Trib or online at columbiatribune.com. You can follow Cam on Twitter at CJ_Teague. Take notes, Nick. You forgot it last time. Nick Kelly. Yeah, and it's yours is @_NickKelly, right? Mine is
Is that what it is? I forgot.
And see, that's just petty, Cam. We don't need that.
I am a Browns fan.
Mine is @Daniel_M_Jones. All right, we got a big day tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in, and catch our work a little bit later this weekend.